This is Joost Maglev of www.joostmaglev.com, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast, one fan's exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. Welcome to episode 16 of the Yes Music Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine. Please remember you can always get involved with the podcast on the site www.yesmusicpodcast.com, where you can subscribe via ISS, via iTunes, and also via email to blog post and episode updates. You can read the show notes and then comment on them, and the blog post as well. You can follow the show on Twitter at Yes Music Podcast. You can send the show an email, show@yesmusicpodcast.com. You can upload a file via the link on the right-hand side of the website, or you can leave a voicemail message and appear on the show yourself by calling 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. Now you can also record a voice message straight onto the website using the Record a Message button on the extreme right-hand side. More people this week have started listening to the podcast on Stitcher.com, which is great. If you have a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app for free and start listening that way. Do keep a lookout for the next interview special, which is coming up soon. I managed to catch up with Joost Maglev recently, and our chat covered a very wide range of Yes-related topics, including some fascinating information about Chris Squire's technique and equipment setup. It's well worth a listen. This week's featured album is the studio tracks from both of the Keys to Ascension albums. I'm not going to look at the live tracks at this point, but I will in a later episode. And in fact, I have now decided to split the studio tracks into two episodes, as time has been rather short for me this week. So I'm going to concentrate on Keys to Ascension this week and Keys to Ascension 2 next week. Luis Angel Mora, and I hope I've pronounced your name correctly, who is at Luis Angel MG on Twitter, is a big fan of these albums, so let's see if Lewis and you agree with what I have to say about them. After the triumphant return of the band in last week's album, Talk, we are reminded that this is Yes we are focusing on, so when we pick up the next studio album, or in this case two studio albums, it's perhaps not a surprise to see that the Yes West iteration has gone, and we're back to what most Yes fans regard as the classic lineup: John Anderson, Chris Squire, Alan White, Steve Howe, and Rick Wakeman. Also back is the, on this occasion, very lavishly produced Roger Dean art cover art, and it's one of those occasions in Yes history when we can indeed judge the album by its cover, as we shall see. Each of the two Keys to Ascension albums comes as a double CD, or record, and features both live tracks recorded at San Luis Obispo, as well as the studio tracks, which we're interested in here. I suppose the only other proper example of live and studio tracks being combined on a Yes album is The Clap, which appears on the Yes album. But that time the live piece was not available elsewhere. This time all the live tracks are from the 1970s era of the band. Along with the album covers, it seems as if the band wanted to make it very clear that the classic lineup was back doing what it did best: live performances of the classics, and new studio tracks in classic style, or at least that appears to be the intention. Whether or not we agree about the new studio tracks remains to be seen. So there's no Trevor Rabin or Tony Kaye in this particular mix, and it's the first time since Tormato in 1978 that this lineup have produced a studio album. If you ignore the shenanigans of Union, of course, and I really think we should. The new tracks on the first Keys to Ascension album are Be the One and That Is. Both are long at 9 minutes 50 and 19 minutes 14, respectively. Writing credits go in different combinations to all members of the band except Rick Wakeman, and perhaps it's the moment to mention that according to Yes mythology, Wakeman did not want to release Keys to Ascension like this. He wanted to have a full album of new studio tracks, which is what was eventually released as the album Key Studio. But before we get sidetracked by politics, let's take a listen to the music. The first track is Be the One, which is split up in traditional Yes style into A, The One, B, Humankind, and 3, Skates. A and B are credited to Anderson and Squire, while C is a Howe composition. Listening to the opening of The One is like returning home after a long time away. It's like a breath of fresh air. Here are arguably all the musicians the Yes fans want to hear together again at last. In the first few seconds, each instrumentalist reminds us of his individual characteristics. Alan White's solid, perfectly judged percussion melds with Steve Howe's intricate runs, rhythmical chords and soloing, Chris Squire's treble-soaked creative bass lines, and Rick Wakeman's washes of sound and counter-melodies, which weave in and out of the texture. It's been a long time coming, but here we have quintessential Yes music, very definitely right back in progressive rock territory. And then Anderson enters with typical mystical lyrics in this uplifting and life-affirming song. The traditional Yes choir supports the melody, and the overall effect is beautiful and peaceful, until the memorable chorus starts in louder, more insistent style, with the backing choir very much in commenting chorus mode, conversing with the melody. The rhythmical structure is very interesting in the chorus. Where we had straight-ahead 80s pop-rock rhythms in choruses in the last few albums, here the lyrics and accompaniment is deliberately disrupted from the natural rhythm in order to add interest and a bit of prog-rock credibility. I'm not saying this is thrown in as a cheap trick, it's more of a masterfully handled device which has its roots in the progressive rock movement. And if you aren't really looking out for it, you might even miss it. It's the level of craft which sets this track apart from some of the previous album work. This is music of a very high order. We can hear again that this lineup is more than the sum of its parts. Around 4 minutes 15 we have the segue into the Humankind section, which is a little heavier, with great vocal harmonies added by Squire, I think. This is more of a rock feel, but a world away from the feel of the Rabin-penned songs of recent albums. Anderson sings some of his most powerful lines, and just listen to the drumming. The energy is amazing, total commitment. The whole band combines and swings into the chorus in classic style, and it's spine-tingling once again. There's even some Wakeman-Howe solo sparring, with Howe seeming to win out in this instance. There are several sections, which the band moves through seamlessly. It sounds like they are revelling in the chance to play together again, and create this classic audio soundscape. Skates turns out to be a short section of Howe and Anderson, which brings a towering work of progressive rock to a conclusion. What is so encouraging here is that this is definitely Yes back to their classic best, but it's not a pastiche, not some guys playing a tribute to the old band. It feels new and fresh, despite being constructed on the sure foundation of the music of Yes of the 1970s. That is also split up into sections. A, togetherness, B, crossfire, C, the giving things, D, that is, E, all in all, and F, how did heaven begin? An enormous number of sections. Togetherness is a Howe composition and starts with a short introduction from Rick Wakeman. Howe then takes over with acoustic guitar. It's not one of his clap-type solos at all. It's a combination of very clear guitar themes with accompaniment from Squire and Wakeman, rather than his folk-inspired solo pieces. The melodic line is very vocal in treatment, as if Howe is using the instrument very much like a voice would sing the lines. This means there are small intervals between the notes, and the general feel is of a song melody. It's beautiful, and once again feels like a new aspect of Yes is being created in front of you as you listen. Squire's bass line begins in simple fashion, but as the mood of the music acquires more movement, it begins to weave in and out of the texture, mainly due to more explorative use of pitch, and it's wonderful to hear this kind of technique once again in Yes music. Howe incorporates some classically inspired devices like sequences and occasional ornamentation of the line, by which I mean elaborating the line with the addition of very fast notes before or after the main note, and once again it's clear that this is the master guitarist at work and in his element. There is a repeated pattern set up by Howe which fades out to be replaced by the fading in of Alan White, using what sounds like brushes initially, and Anderson singing a repeated phrase reminiscent of the tribal sounds on something like the ABWH album and elsewhere. The mood changes as we enter Crossfire. This does not sound like classic Yes at all. It takes its cue maybe from ABWH again, and unusually for Anderson songs, at least in the classic Yes period, it's very much telling the story of some characters. It's an unsettling topic of drug abuse and young women's life around gangs, and while the music is not downbeat at all, it is engineered to be unsettling as well, with fragmented runs in quite a spiky tone from Steve Howe, doubled at times by Squire. And incidentally, this showcases the dexterous virtuosity of both instrumentalists. I wonder how many rock bassists could match their lead guitar colleagues note for note in passages as fast and intricate as the ones in this song. Anderson's vocal line in sections rises from low in his register to high quite quickly. In other Yes songs, we have seen this rising pitch used to heighten the mood before a release, but here I think it's used rather differently. Anderson's vocals are fast and sound almost anxious. Clearly he's trying to convey the meaning of the lyrics through both his delivery and the rising pitch. It's as if he is playing out the hopelessness of the character's situations and maybe even giving us the feeling that they are crying out for help. This section ends and Howe comes in with a much calmer feeling, with repeated patterns again for the giving things. This sounds like some kind of reconciliation or resolution of the previous section, and if you listen carefully to Squire's bass line, he shows his remarkable knack of taking even the quietest and most peaceful music and adding bass notes which encompass the whole pitch range of the instrument, which he places at fairly unexpected points in the rhythmical structure, where others would perhaps be content to hold a few low pedal points. Next we move quite abruptly, but in a carefully controlled way, into another different feel for the That Is section. If you look at the lyrics here, they are the same as the previous section, at least initially, but Anderson sings them much more quickly against the percussive interjections of the other band members. The verse sections are interspersed with a remarkable theme which is treated in a dazzling variety of ways by the band. Sometimes Chris Squire plays it on his own, sometimes it's in parallel with Steve Howe, sometimes doubled by Wakeman's keyboards, sometimes stripped right down. This is progressive rock arrangement of the very highest order. Wakeman even adds grand piano into the mix before Anderson leads the whole band into the next section, a triumphant exposition of All in All. To be honest, I find it quite hard to keep track of what's going on in these interlocking sections, but perhaps it's enough to say that you need to go and listen to it for yourself to appreciate the superb management of the material and craft of the band. There is a great sing-along chorus, which then ebbs away as we enter How Did Heaven Begin, which reprises the quiet acoustic guitar of earlier. This is a short section, and Alan White brings in growing drum patterns to accompany Anderson's tribal chanting again as Agree to Agree begins. Here we have an improvised-sounding Howe solo above Squire reiterating the fast pattern he shared with the lead guitarist earlier. Wakeman takes up the mantle to recap more previous material, and what we have is some fantastic interplay between Howe and Wakeman, just like the old days with Squire and White holding it all together beneath. Anderson brings in those rising vocal patterns again, but this time it's all in uplifting mood, and it looks like we have been on a descriptive journey in this track, which puts me in mind of how classical composers in the 19th century wrote programmatic tone poems describing a story or series of concepts in music. Certainly some words I could use to describe that is, include immersive, complex, progressive, staggering. So this is where I'm going to split this look at the two Keys to Ascension albums. So far it's a fantastic start. It's not the sound of Fragile, the Yes album, or Tales, but for me it deserves its place on my shelf alongside those albums. There's a return to a classic progressive rock aesthetic, which, as we will see next week, is extended even further on Keys to Ascension 2. So that's about it for this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. I hope you've enjoyed it. Next week we will cover, as I say, the studio tracks on Key to Ascension 2. So, in the meantime, please get involved at www.yesmusicpodcast.com, on Twitter at yesmusicpodcast, by sending an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com, by uploading a file, by leaving a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. Or finally, record an instant message on the website via the new button on the extreme right-hand side. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.